I think it's only through discussing it that do we realize what's happening and we can start supporting each other and lifting each other up.
Hello and welcome to the Medical Women Podcast, the world's first podcast aimed at supporting and empowering medical women in their careers. I'm Dr. Nuthana Bayankaram, and it's my honour and joy to be your host as each week we speak to a fantastic guest who's here to help us in our careers. I'm Vice President of the Medical Women's Federation, the largest body of women doctors in the UK, and the voice of medical women on medical issues. Join us as each week we hear about a topic that's helpful for all of us in our careers. Hello, lovely listeners. I hope you are all doing well on this Tuesday morning. Can't quite believe it's October already. Time just seems to be zooming by, but it is October and it is Menopause Awareness Month. And later on in the series, we're going to be doing some episodes about women's health. I'm really excited because we've got our first podcast sponsor who is sponsoring the next few episodes, not today's, but the upcoming four episodes that are going to be a series on women's health. And we're going to be going through the life course from thinking about fertility, optimizing our fertility, and how we look after ourselves in terms of nutrition and exercise at different stages of our menstrual cycles, and then a couple of episodes on menopause and an episode on how we look after our skin at different stages of our lives. So lots of exciting women's health episodes coming up, and really exciting that we've got a sponsor for those. Hooray! Today's episode is with the two wonderful co-founders of Surviving in Scrubs, Dr. Chelsea Jewett and Dr. Becky Cox. Now, I'm sure many of you will have seen the recent article that was highlighting experiences of women surgeons in the UK. And it was really horrible how many women have experienced sexual harassment and sexual assault particularly during their training, but also later on in their careers. And of course, at the Medical Women's Federation, since the Medical Women's Federation was founded in 1917, it has all been about gender equity in medicine, which of course includes medicine and surgery, but how we can have more gender equity, how we can support women doctors. And women doctors shouldn't have to be dealing with this sort of stuff at work. It's not at all appropriate. And thank you to all those women who were brave enough to share their stories so that we can all work together to make a difference. And I've said this multiple times on the podcast, but I'll say it again. I firmly believe that these are system problems. It's not individuals at fault here. It's system problems that allow these things to happen. But that doesn't mean that as individuals, we can't do anything about it. And I think Becky and Chelsea are perfect examples of that. So together, they've co-founded Surviving in Scrubs, and you will hear all about it during the episode, and about how it's a place for where people can share their stories. And Chelsea and Becky are doing a wonderful job at really campaigning and making change. And I know that they were involved earlier this year with a roundtable that the GMC, BMA, multiple people went to. MWF wasn't invited to that, I'm not quite sure why, but I'm really glad that Becky was able to go. And they're really making sure that this issue is tackled and is taken seriously. And it was wonderful to have them on the podcast speaking about the really, really important work that they're doing, that all of us need to be getting behind and supporting. So I hope that you find this episode really helpful, and I'm sure you will find hearing from Chelsea and Becky really, really inspiring. It's up to all of us to change the culture, and we can do that if we all work together. And that includes working with the men as well, of course. But enjoy this episode, and I will see you again next week. Bye.
So it's wonderful to have with me today Dr. Chelsea Jewett and Dr. Becky Cox, who I'm sure many of you will have heard of because of their fantastic campaign that they've set up called Surviving in Scrubs. So very warm welcome to the podcast, both of you. Could you start by just introducing yourselves to our listeners?
Yeah, sure. I'll go first. So I'm Chelsea Jewett. Clinically, I'm an ST3 in emergency medicine working up in Merseyside. And I am one of the co-founders of Surviving in Scrubs.
Brilliant. I'm Becky Cox. I'm also one of the co-founders of Surviving in Scrubs. My clinical trade is that I'm a portfolio GP, which means I seem to do anything and everything these days. So I work part-time academically. I'm also a GP specialist in gynaecology with a focus on pelvic pain.
Oh, cool. And how, I mean, it's a wonderful campaign, and I can't believe that we didn't have it before. So thank you both for co-founding it. How did it come about for you to co-found it?
Yeah, it came about I actually presented some work at the Medical Women's Federation conference back in November 2019, looking into everyday sexism within medicine. And then that was the joint conference with the BMA. And from that, the BMA have sort of taken that project under their wing and have done the full, you know, survey, sexism in medicine survey, which was published in 2021.
Yeah, I think it was 2021. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting confused because the new year's happened. I'm aware that it's March now, but still. So that was published. And whilst that survey was going out, Becky got in contact with me and we just started talking on Zoom, putting the world to rights because, you know, it was still very COVID-y at the time. So we then eventually got together in person after the survey had been published and thought, what can we do about this? What can we do going forwards? And that's sort of where the campaigns come from. So I don't know if you want to explain a bit more about what we do, Becky.
Yeah, so we were sort of mainly frustrated that it felt like nothing was happening off the back of Chelsea's survey. And it didn't feel like it was acceptable to talk about sexism in medicine. It wasn't acceptable to talk about sexual harassment or sexual assault. And yet, you know, the survey showed that this was happening. So we decided to set up our own website, which neither of us had ever done before. So we had a good stab at that on WordPress. And then within the website, the whole concept was that survivors of any of those three behaviours could get in touch with us anonymously through a form on the website, and they would be able to share their testimony of what happened to them, what they experienced. We started off very small. We had a trickle of stories coming through to us and we sort of read every single one, put them up on the website and sort of went along at a slower pace for a little while. Then we we got together and just went, we're just going to write an open letter to the GMC and see what happens. both thinking, oh my goodness, are we going to get sacked? So we put this letter out on Twitter saying, you know, they were updating good medical practice at the time, which is our guidelines for how we should behave as doctors. There's nothing in it that says you shouldn't be sexist, you shouldn't sexually harass your colleagues, etc. It just says be nice to everyone, essentially. So we said, you know, it needs to be explicit. It needs to say you must not perpetrate these behaviours. And a couple of days later, we had an email from the Times newspaper who said, we'd like to interview you about this. We did that interview, it went to press and everything exploded. We were just absolutely inundated with the press, all newspapers, TV programmes, Women's Hour. It it went crazy. And it was just the two of us trying to do everything and trying to do all these interviews, writing blogs, writing articles, started doing speaking events, really just trying to raise awareness about what's going on. Because it's felt like for so many years, there's almost a secret culture of these behaviours that exist, and it's perpetuated down generations. It doesn't seem to be getting any better. And so we decided we needed to speak out. And that's essentially what we've been doing ever since.
Well, I think it's amazing. And as you say, it is a conversation that people aren't really speaking about. So I'm really glad that you're here speaking about it on the podcast, because I keep trying to have conversations that that we don't speak about. And Chelsea, I'm really glad that you mentioned your presentation that you first did, because I've definitely mentioned you and that presentation on previous episodes. So it's nice for listeners to know that this is the Chelsea that I keep talking about.
The legend.
Yes,
oh God. Absolutely. Don't think so.
And I know a lot of the, you know, like lots of the stories and things are anonymized. Would you be able to share some of the things that keep coming up? Because as you say, I'm sure lots of our listeners, you know, our listeners range from medical students all the way up to retired doctors. I'm sure lots of the stories will resonate with them. But as you say, we don't always talk about these things. And sometimes it's so pervasive that it's only when somebody else mentions it that we think, oh, I didn't even realize that was sexism, because it just happens all the time.
Yeah,
there's quite a lot of themes coming through. It's important for us to say that our website's open to anyone that works within healthcare, so it isn't just doctors, it's nurses, we've had physios, occupational therapists, all different, I can't even think of
paramedics, anymore. Psychologists.
There we go. I had a absolute brain freeze. I was like, oh, other jobs. But literally anyone and everyone can submit. And there's a lot of themes in terms of like power dynamics, feeling scared to say anything, freezing when something happens, a lot of kind of comments under the guise of banter, which I think we all know far too well as a bit of an excuse for this behaviour. There's been a lot of examples within the theatre space, from surgical trainees, medical students, from anaesthetists as well. Just vulnerability in that space, but also out on the wards, you know, just... it's just pervasive. It's just absolutely everywhere, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think it sort of extends. It's not, you know, if there's a scale of these things, if it's possible to do that, you know, it might be to start with sexist comments, derogatory comments about your gender, you know, inappropriately asking when you're going to have kids. Oh, you can't be a surgeon, you're too nice, you're too good with the patients. Why don't you go off and be a GP, because that's family friendly? Yeah. That sort of thing, all this sort of implied, all these assumptions that people make. But it does unfortunately extends up to much worse behaviour, where we have had cases of repeated sexual harassment, of stalking. We've had, unfortunately, sexual assault and rape and repeated sexual abuse as well come through to us.
Yeah, and it's horrible to think about the extent of things. And as you say, some of it can be, like, we've had a group of medical students write to the Medical Women's Federation recently saying when we've been on placement, people have made comments about, well, you're a woman, so you're going to want to be a GP, to like the other extreme of things. So what can, I mean, I think all of our listeners, you know, most of our listeners are women and definitely will want to do something to make things better. And I keep sort of saying on the podcast that these are system issues, but as individuals, we can do things to change them. And what do you think each of us can do to make things a bit better and I guess call things out when we see it, because we don't always do that.
Yeah, I think we need to be talking about this, you know. So much of this, you know, the odd comment happens, everybody turns the other way, they don't discuss it. I mean, since launching this campaign, I've had numerous conversations with friends talking about incidents that have happened to them that I never heard about before, before we started saying, actually, we should be talking about this. And I think it's only through discussing it that do we realise what's happening and we can start supporting each other and lifting each other up. to counteract these behaviours. But, you know, there needs to be responsibility coming from the people perpetrating the behaviour, doesn't there? And we need to see from our organisations that they are aware that this behaviour happens, that they're going to take it seriously and going to start investigating it.
And when you wrote to the... Oh, sorry, go on, Chelsea.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I heard a really good example this week of sort of like good support and good practice. I was speaking to a surgical trainee, and she was telling me how where she works is very male dominated, just in terms of the demographics, etc. But they've got they've just got like a little WhatsApp group with the female surgeons, and every so often they go out for dinner or they go out for a drink, and they just have a bit of a rant about it, to be honest. And some, you know, there's consultants in that group, there's junior trainees in that group, but it brings a real kind of camaraderie and a feeling of support. And from that, there have been, you know, complaints, and there've been complaints submitted against perpetrators, and there've been discussions and lectures and workshops in that trust about these behaviours. And it's really, I think it's great that kind of, I don't like the word, but the sisterhood of that group have, you know, been able to get together after talking about these things and try to implement change. Mm. I just think that's really, really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And when, you know, you mentioned writing to the GMC and saying that they should put this in good medical practice, did you ever get a response from the GMC about that?
We did, and we're still in conversation with them about it. So we had a response back from some of the writing groups who were involved with the update for good medical practice. So we've met with them several times to talk about what we think should be in good medical practice, of, you know, saying explicitly that these behaviours are not acceptable. And it's, as far as we're aware, it's got to the stage where it's essentially all of this, the good medical practice has to be ratified. So apparently it goes through multiple meetings, multiple councils, and eventually the GMC's council has to sign off on it. So we're not sure what's happened as the next steps yet, but we're hoping we'll hear a bit more about it later this year.
Yeah, as the Medical Women's Federation, we kind of had some sessions with the GMC as well, where they wanted to speak to women medical students and doctors of different grades and specialties and things. And these issues kept coming up about, you know, you need to mention something about sexism and that harassment is not okay. So yeah, that's great that you wrote to them, and hopefully they are listening. I guess, as you say, it just depends, doesn't it, of all the different people that ratify it. Hopefully they will also agree that these things are yeah. really important. But I remember you were doing a campaign, I can't remember if it was in December, but you were writing to quite a few of the Royal Colleges and things, yeah. weren't you? How did that go? Can you tell us a bit more about that?
This was for International Day to End Violence Against Women and Girls, which was the 25th of November, if I remember rightly. And so we decided that our point of action for that day would be that over the day and also the 10 days of activism afterwards, we would write to every single medical college, which they turned out to be more than we thought. There's quite a few of them. And it actually turned out, you know, we're going to write a letter, we're going to publish this openly on Twitter every day. So hopefully they would respond to us and we'd be able to find out what each of the Royal Colleges are doing about this, if they're doing anything at all. And so we put out all these letters. Sometimes we had a response very quickly on social media. Sometimes we got a letter back a few weeks later. To date, though, there are 17 colleges that have not got back to us of the 26. So we were really pleased with the initial responses we had, mm. but actually there's a few that need to be named and shamed at some point.
yeah. Well, we won't name and shame all of them
here. No.
but the ones that did get back to you, did they have this on the agenda at all, or were they writing back to say, oh, thanks very much, we'll think about this later?
It's a bit of a mixed picture. So Chelsea's own college we wrote to, but she's already been working with them. And so they, you know, seem to be doing quite a lot in this area. They've been doing surveys, they've been doing working groups, you know, really active. We know that the Royal College of Surgeons have been doing loads of work. So they've got a working party on sexual misconduct run by a large group of consultants who have recently finished a survey of their trainees. And the Royal College of Anaesthetists got involved with that too and have also surveyed their members. That data will be coming out later this year, and they're then going to think about action points for what to do next as a result of what they find. But other colleges that sort of came back to us said, well, actually, this is all a bit new to us and we don't really know where to go. So the Royal College of Obs and Gynae were really good. They got in touch and said, you know, help us, please. Basically, we need to figure out what's going on. We don't know what the next step is. So we had a meeting with them and we'll be following up on that, I think, next month. And then my own college, the Royal College of GPs, again, we're still exploring exactly what work's going on in that area, but they've been really engaged. And I hope that we will be able to go forward, perhaps do some survey work and also think about what the college can do to raise awareness of these issues. And I think a lot of, you know, the Royal College of GPs were, you know, as a specialty, general practice thinks it doesn't have a problem with this. It, you know, it thinks it's the family friendly specialty where all the women go to work. And actually, we've had so many stories come through from general practice, the, you know, appalling behaviours that are going on. And actually, you know, trainees coming through experiencing it, those working within general practice itself experience it. And so I don't think any specialty is untouched by these behaviours.
Yeah,
I think absolutely. General practice is also the fact that every practice is different makes it quite challenging as well, and with the general practice as well. So
it does.
There's just so many issues that we keep unraveling.
Yeah. So what's next for surviving in Scrubs? Because you seem to be doing amazing things, and I'm so glad that everything that you're doing was picked up by all of these different media outlets and just amplifying the voice of what you're doing.
To be honest. So we've got quite a lot of speaking events coming up. We're redesigning our website and restructuring our website and putting a lot of resources on there, a lot of information on there in terms of what employers can do, what survivors of these behaviours can do, where they can get support. So we're just really trying to push forward with that, because that is, you know, the main kind of bulk of our work. We're having some talks with Royal Colleges, with the Academy of Medical...
Academy of Medical Royal Colleges.
Yeah. Trying to get into some universities as well, because this is a problem that affects students.
Mm-hmm.
Students are very vulnerable to this kind of thing. Just loads. Just absolutely tons.
Yeah, we're off doing a bit of a speaking tour of the UK for this year. Yes. It wasn't planned that way, but that seems to be what's happened. So we're speaking at a variety of sort of specialty-based conferences, and also some of the broader sort of women in medical leadership conferences. We're also doing some workshops and educational sessions as well. So we've started doing educational sessions for hospital trusts, as well as for individual specialty groups too. On top of that, we continue to need stories coming through to our website. So if anybody is listening and has a story that they think they would like to submit, please have a look at our website. At the moment, we've got just over 150 stories on there, but we're always wanting to get more. The more, the better. And on top of everything else, we're working with the GMC, we're working with the BMA. There is research going on in the background as well. So there's a large systematic review that we haven't done, but has been done by an excellent researcher in London called Caroline Kamau Mitchell. That's looking at these behaviours across medicine internationally. We're going to have some really interesting results. And the plan is, going forwards, we want to involve Parliament with this. So
amazing.
We're considering sort of our options at the moment, but I think potentially we're going to be looking at asking for a public inquiry into what's happening in healthcare.
Wow. How like, because it's just the two of you, how do you balance doing all of this alongside clinical practice and everything else that you do?
Good question.
Just don't sleep. Don't do anything else.
it's tricky. So my portfolio job allows me to have a bit more flexibility in my schedule. So it means I can, you know, take the afternoon off and do bits of work, or like this, work in the evenings as well. But yeah, we've just had to lean into it over the last, where are we now? 9 months. We've just had to sort of really, you know, use every bit of time every weekend to try and sort of keep going with all of this. And yeah, it's just our passion for this campaign that's kept us going through all of it.
And and I'm resting full time and I do A&E shifts, so I work all over the place anyway. So actually a lot of my days are free. A lot of my mornings are free, so a lot of my shifts are late and weekends and nights. So just fit in as best as we can.
What's amazing that you do.
I was going to say, we should also say we have got some volunteers now to help out with us. So we've
amazing.
Got some absolutely fantastic volunteers who are helping us with the content of the website and things, and pushing with the social media and stuff. So we are getting some help now, thankfully.
Yeah, it's not just the two of us. We do have our small group, which are, they're all absolutely brilliant. And I think probably the support that we give each other gets us through as well. So, you know, the number of meetings the number of WhatsApps that go backwards and forwards, and the one-to-one meetings that me and Chelsea have, it's just, I see Chelsea more than I see my own husband. So,
yeah, same.
She knows more about what's going on in my life.
Yeah, ditto.
That's really funny, but I think it's really nice that you have got that. And I guess, you know, you're working in different specialties and different parts of the country, so how did how was it that you came together? Was it because you contacted Chelsea after the BMA stuff?
Yeah, it's because I started stalking Chelsea.
Okay, one of the behaviours that were
historically disapprove of.
It was actually, you know, I sent one email and you responded.
I think we're okay.
I just sent an email and then we ended up chatting via email, then met online because we were in lockdown. Mm-hmm. And then we ended up meeting a couple of times in lockdown. And then eventually when we came out of lockdown, and then March, April last year, we met in person then. Mm-hmm. And we met at a pub in Birmingham, probably drank too much wine and went, should we start a website? that's literally what happened. We were walking down to the train station. We said, shall we do this? And then we had a meeting a week later and
went on our website. Oh, amazing.
We're actually going to do it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All good ideas start with wine.
Exactly. And I think if you get a spark, just go with it. Absolutely run with it.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because the first Medical Women's Federation meeting that's documented as our first official meeting on the 1st of February 1917 happened in a tavern on the Thames. They did a similar thing. They all just had some wine and they were like, yeah, let's set up this federation.
Yeah.
106 years later, here we are.
maybe we'll still be going in 106 years. I don't know.
I was sort of reflecting on this when it was MWF's birthday, and I was like, actually, in some ways, it's quite sad that it's still carrying on for 106 years, because you would hope that the issues didn't exist and so it didn't need to be around anymore. So I really hope that neither of these organizations need to be around in another 106 years.
I really hope so.
Yeah.
You want to be a victim of your own success, don't you?
Yeah.
You
want to be
exactly.
Campaign, that's it. Put us out of a job, please.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Let them go back to actually like sleeping and having some time at the weekend. Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing everything about the campaign. And I just want to ask you some quick fire questions before we finish, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So the first question that I always ask, and I really shouldn't because I keep buying too many books, so I've put myself on a book buying ban, kind of not conducive with asking people every week on a podcast for their book recommendations. But if you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would that be?
I think I would go with this Margaret Atwood book called Alias Grace.
Oh, that's a good book.
I love
that's
that
a good book.
It's so good. And it's based on a true crime story as well. There's a mixed perception of who's the victim, who's the murderer in the book. And there's a lot about women's autonomy and being victim blamed as well. And it's just such a good read. And I spent most of the time confused as to what was actually happening in the book. But I think it's a really, really good novel.
Yeah, it is. I've read it. It's really, really good. I read it after I read Handmaid's Tale because I was like, I'm going to read some Margaret Atwood. Mm. And then I was like, oh, this is really good.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've actually read any more Margaret Atwood because she's got like a million books out, hasn't she? So it would have bankrupted me. So I'm like, you messenger. As soon as someone tells me about a book, I have to buy it. Mm. I've got about 25 books on my to-be-read pile. Listening to this podcast is what's bankrupted me, I'll tell you.
Yes, that. I know. Chelsea tweeted that once with some photos of the books from the Medical Women podcast. And was like, I'm going to go bankrupt from these books. I was like, yeah, sorry, I should probably start.
I've recently joined a library, so I'm going to start at least borrowing books. So my book recommendation, I read a lot of fiction and I like really flawed characters, and I've just finished, it's quite a new book, it's called Cleopatra and Frankenstein by Coco Mellors. It's really good. It's just a really good book. It follows a very dysfunctional relationship and really dysfunctional people. I just really find it interesting. I just find people interesting, especially people breaking characters, so that was a really good read. Quite escapism-y. That's why I read. I read for fun. Big nerd that I am.
Yeah. Those both sound like great books and I haven't read either of them. So there's more books to add to my to read list.
Well, some payback.
Yeah. Yes, well, thank you for those recommendations. We'll definitely put those in. And my last quick fire question that I'm going to ask you both is a question that I'm borrowing from a group of children and young people from the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health and Us group. And they very kindly let me borrow this question. So if you were a type of biscuit, what type of biscuit would you be and why? Mm. Chelsea, do you want to go first this time?
So I'd be a custard cream because it's like the boring cousin of a bourbon, but it's like, so I can come across quite boring, but I am actually multi-layered, quite tough on the outside but soft on the inside. I'm very efficient. A custard cream is a very efficient biscuit. It's a one dunk wonder. In, out your brew, in, out your mouth, done.
That is a brilliant answer.
Thank you. I've rehearsed it.
You've rehearsed it. Becky, what biscuit would you be?
Oh, well, my answer isn't as good because I only got warned about this today. So time to prep this. But I'll go with my favourite biscuit, which is a dark chocolate digestive, because digestives are great. They're a solid biscuit. And who doesn't love dark chocolate? Amazing.
Absolutely. Well, those are great biscuits. I think one day I'm just going to set up a shop that has like biscuits and books and or like a library where people can come and like eat biscuits and read the books.
Absolutely. It sounds amazing.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and we'll pop links to the website and everything in the show notes, and definitely encourage all of our listeners to go on and share their stories on your website.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for listening to the Medical Women podcast. Make sure to subscribe for free on whichever podcast platform you listen on so that you automatically get our episodes. The aim of this podcast is to support and empower as many medical women in their careers as we possibly can. So please share this episode with at least one other medical woman. If you're interested in joining the Medical Women's Federation, we would love to have you, and all links to our website and social media are in the show notes. This podcast has been produced on behalf of the Medical Women's Federation by Dr. Nuthana Bayankaram and Miss Jenna McKenzie. Our music was composed and played by Dr. Kethaki Bayankaram. Thank you so much for listening.